T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And their focus is always ahead of everybody else's and everything, as you can see by their play. I'm not surprised with the way they're playing now and their team concept. They've always had that. They've always played down to keep themselves sharp. So at the end of the game, they got to make a run to overcome. This is their legacy. This is how great these guys are. This is what Joe Lacob's talking about, light years ahead. We don't even have time enough to get into Steve Kerr and the coaches and how they've weathered the storm and the onslaughts and everything. This is an amazing run. This is a run where you have to sit back, buckle up, and enjoy the ride. I'm out.
Appreciate the phone call. A lot of great passion there. He's right, too. If you go back and you break down each of the 5 years individually to get such a separate and distinct championship-level run each year is truly remarkable. Like, the Patriots kind of do the same thing every year they make a run at the Super Bowl. They win the division. They win 11 to 13 games during the regular season. There's always one bad game that they play where everyone writes them off and talks about getting rid of Brady, and then they storm back the following week to win by 40. This past year, remember, they went to Tennessee. They scored like 6 points and got beat by the Titans, and everyone figured they were done. There was the game in Kansas City where everyone was talking about getting rid of Brady and turning it over to Garoppolo a few years ago. But they do the same thing every year, and it's great for the fans of Boston. I'm not knocking the approach, but it really is the same storyline every year. Somehow the league or someone else is out to get you. You tighten up the ranks and you claim it's Boston against the world, and you go out, you handle your business, you get a first round bye, you host some team that you blow out in the opening round, whether it's the Chargers or Houston or whoever, and then you generally host the championship game. Maybe you go on the road, you win it, it's competitive, and then there's 2 weeks of Brady legacy, Belichick legacy, and a Super Bowl that you either win in very close fashion or lose in very close fashion. That's generally how it plays out. For the Warriors, year one was the out-of-nowhere year where no one was believing it as it was happening. Year two is the 73-win season, where all of a sudden you're stacked up against Jordan's team, but you don't actually close the deal. You have the crazy suspension in the NBA Finals. Year three, here comes Kevin Durant, so now it's the super team to end all super teams that only needs 17 games to get through the playoffs. Year four is Durant part two, as you pretty much put a nail in the coffin that is LeBron James, but you have to come back from 3-2 down against Houston, so there is that drama point. And now this year, it's the injuries, it's the pending departure of Kevin Durant. It's the Klay Thompson free agency thing. Like, we have gotten separate and distinct storylines for every single championship run. Every now and again, just step back and look at that and go, wow,
right,
this is as diverse of a book as anyone's ever written.
And think about what they've done with the secondary pieces, because we know the Splash Brothers and Draymond have been there through it all, and Iguodala and Sean Livingston, of course. But I was just jotting down some of the names and some of the moves. David West, you bring him in. Bogut, you trade for him. He goes away, and now he comes back again. The fact that DeMarcus Cousins just picked you out of nowhere to sign for the mid-level.
And that's such a low... That storyline is so far down the totem pole where 26 other teams would be the number one storyline,
right,
of the team season.
Right, and hopefully he gets a chance to come back and play again here in the finals. What they did to JaVale McGee's career, it was a complete resurrection for JaVale. Zaza Pachulia comes in here and he plays a role. Jonas Jerebko, and then a guy by the name of Alfonso McKinney, who played in Luxembourg, for crying out loud, yet the Warriors able to identify him as a piece. Yeah, incredibly small country. Wedge right there between Belgium, France, and Liechtenstein as we go into European geography for just a moment. So it's beyond just the top flight guys, Joe. It's what they've done backfilling the bottom half of the roster that's been so impressive.
Al and Hayward. Or Ali, sorry about that. Ali and Hayward, my eyes deceive me. Ali, welcome to the show. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, Joe Lowe and Dibs? You guys are awesome.
We know. Hey, thank you.
Yeah, of course. I got two things I want to say. I know I'm a little off topic, but if Durant comes back, you know, I don't know if someone on this show or previously said it on a previous show, they need Curry to have a discussion with this guy and tell him, listen, you need to move around. move the ball. I mean, a stat says like we pass 150 times more with him off the court. None of this ISO crap. Two, you know, you guys talking about the legacy and everything. Iguodala and Livingston were huge pieces. And reports show earlier this year that they might retire after if they win a championship this year. So who's going to fill those shoes? And I'm out, guys.
Good phone call. The idea of if Durant comes back, we don't have to worry about any conversations or any how they're all going to fit together. If he's back, he's back. You just figure you're the favorites to win the title, and you roll with that. They'll figure it out. I mean, next year, the regular season would probably be even more just
mundane,
right?
Because
it's like it's another 82 games where you don't even want to see any of them play. Just get into the playoffs, slot them with a top four seed, and let them play there because none of this even matters. I mean, they're proving how little it matters to them the way they're firing the engines up at the key time.
And Iguodala is not retiring. Let's put that notion to bed. He's making $16 million a year, and what he's showing you in the playoffs, Lo, is that you can go ahead and have him chill throughout the regular season, although this year he was better than last year. This is when he's making his money. The interesting one is Livingston, who I believe is under contract for another $8 million for next year, but the sense is that he's going to retire. $8 million, would you come back and gut it out, Low, for one more year?
They'll give him his money. I think that without a doubt, Joe and Dibbs, I'm coming back. I'm not letting the $8 million just saying bye-bye to $8 million. He's not a guy that made a bunch of money. This is a guy that you're looking at $8 million.
Right.
He's coming back. He is not going to leave $8 million on the table. He'll friggin' suck it up, get a trainer, figure it out. But I'm coming back for $8
million. In other throwback moments, I do want to shout out you and your Instagram feed for posting that Jets picture.
Oh, it was awesome.
It was incredible. All of a sudden, because sometimes, whatever, we see each other all throughout the week. If your feed comes up, it's like, oh, okay, I'll take a glance or whatever, what you're doing or what Lowe's got going on. And to see you and Deuce in the Jets uniform running down the sideline with the pill.
He has the Fresno State one where he's laying on the bed.
Yeah,
he's got the mustache.
That's even better. That's right. Good call, Coach.
You got people in the feed telling you to put a shirt on, son.
Right.
A lot of people in there.
Keep the throwbacks coming, though, Lowe. Yeah, those are great.
Throwbacks.
Those are fun.
On an unrelated note, should Lowe bend the knee? Well, you build someone up, you got to break them.
Leave Lowe
alone.
Bend the knee.
That's it.
Brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. The comeback to end all comebacks. Are we bringing back the Dubcon 3 shirts? Let it marinate for a little bit. I think we need to bring them back for the NBA Finals because it's in full swing at the current moment. We'll take more of your phone calls as well. But first, here's Anna with what's coming up on the game.
All right, thanks, Joe. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. The Warriors look to wrap up the Western Conference Finals tonight in Portland. Game 4 coverage starts at 4:30 with Warriors Live right here on 95.7 The Game. Andre Iguodala had an MRI yesterday after having soreness in his lower leg. The results came back clean, but he is listed as questionable for tonight. Should Andre start? Joe Lowndes will discuss and ask Jim Barnett when he joins the show this morning at 8:30. Draymond Green on Saturday posted his 7th career triple-double in the playoffs. Dre talked about making an adjustment to his games. The guys will discuss why. Plus, they'll talk to Kalena Azubuki, who will be in studio today for the 9 a.m. hour. We'll stream that hour on 95.7thegame.com. The Sharks get blown out by the Blues 5-0. San Jose now on the brink with St. Louis up 3-2. Series shifts to St. Louis tomorrow. And plus, Magic Johnson talked about why he stepped down as president of the Lakers. The guys will get into his controversial comments. I'm Anna Kagadaikis on the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowndes continues on 95.7 The Game.
All right, Kalena Azubuki is going to join us in studio at 9:05. You can not only listen to that, you can watch it as well. We'll be streaming on the website, as we're doing now every day during the 9 o'clock hour, 957thegame.com, right there on the main page. It's your boys, Joe Lowndes, here on 95.7 The Game. Big hour coming your way right now, because there are a couple topics we need to get into that aren't necessarily Warrior-related, but we will be talking about the Warriors. Magic Johnson went on TV this morning and just went scorched earth.
Man.
Magic, burn it down, baby.
Like, you thought some characters in Game of Thrones were angry.
I love that.
Magic Johnson just went on TV and aired out the team's dirty laundry for everyone to see. We're going to get into that in a little bit, but we have to address this from the weekend. Your boy David Carr, one of Fresno's finest, I would imagine.
Yes.
Good guy.
Great guy.
He's come on shows here at the station.
Talked about he loved pancakes.
A bunch. Nice guy. seems by all accounts just an all-around good dude who's been good to the station. So we're not looking to tear him down right now. But he said something over the weekend on the NFL Network that probably has to be addressed specifically in this marketplace because he's referring to the San Francisco 49ers and one Joe Montana. We're going to play the audio for you, but essentially the discussion was over this. David Carr does not believe Joe Montana is a top 10 quarterback of the Super Bowl era. Here's why.
I've been in the pocket. I understand. Okay, look, Bill Walsh is a genius. Bill Walsh is a genius, and Joe Montana arrived at precisely the right time. Just like the White Wizard, Gandalf, right? He arrives precisely when he intends to. Joe Montana showed up from Notre Dame. Bill Walsh is a genius. The defenses they were facing were not even close to being ready for this. This was a walk in the park. This was 7-on-7 against junior high kids. They had no idea what they were seeing with the shifts and the motions and the ball out on time. Steve Young is a is
you know
a
far the one word that I
interesting now. Not going to lean anyone in any particular direction, but I would like to tee you up first, being the former football player, knowing the Carr family, being tied to Fresno as the Carrs are, this does reflect upon you and all of the people, the great people of the Central Valley. The idea that Joe Montana, not a top 10 quarterback all time. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, David said it wasn't Derek, so it's the older brother. I think you got to look at it and just take it with a grain of salt. That's his opinion. Is he wrong? Absolutely. It's to say, then how did McCall, you see the success that the young quarterback's having in Kansas City. Was the league not ready for it? Why? Defenses adjust, all those different things. Still, to look at the numbers, is it Aaron Rodgers throwing for 4,000 yards? So you see the different things. Why, what? So you can't, I think that falls on its face when you think about what a lot of these quarterbacks done and what they have done in the modern era now. I think the game's a lot. He's talking about, yeah, teams wasn't ready for it, but they could be a hell of a lot more physical. They could grab receivers. They wasn't a five-yard chuck rule. You can hold. You can hit guys going across the middle. Quarterbacks could be more. They had to be in the pocket, and their life was at stake because they could absolutely get motorboated. So when you think about all the different things surrounding it, you still have to have the ability to make it happen and get it done. So I disagree with that. Even though it's Fresno State, I totally disagree. I think this right now, football is dormant right now. So it was just a show. And then they get you in those places and you got to take a side. So I thought it was hogwash.
I totally disagree with him as well. Top 10. I mean, maybe this is just me growing up loving Joe Montana, but when I think of the best moments, I think of Joe Montana and I think of what he's done in the Super Bowl and being perfect in the Super Bowl. And then, I don't know, it also seemed kind of weird when he said, you know, I've been in the pocket. And then you say that and you're talking about Joe Montana and his greatness. Sorry, David, I don't think your career quite turned out to be the same as Joe's.
Mm. There's a take. There's a sizzler for you.
No, that's
David Carr, not Joe Montana. I like
hey,
it.
You came hard.
I like it.
And he's a good-looking guy. You came hard. You think he's a pretty
Well, we look for strong that's opinions around these parts.
Nice.
We look for strong opinions around these parts. Now, is this just your classic troll job, which many think it is, or is it one of those, all right, we're going to have a conversation about this, try to build a case. He does try to lay out facts as to why. He's not just screaming for no reason. Bill Walsh, he says, it's basically, the implication there is that he's a system guy, and that the entire league was caught so off guard that probably just about any quarterback could have stepped in there and performed well. How does the David Carr comment land with you that over the weekend on NFL Network, he says he does not believe Joe Montana is a top 10 quarterback of the Super Bowl era?
I don't often do this, but in this one case, I'll let LeBron go ahead and speak for me.
It's trash.
It's just trash. It's a trash take, and sadly,
nice.
It reflects upon all of the hot takers from Fresno, California.
Okay.
So
you had your chance.
You had a great chance.
You had a chance for everybody as well.
And we even went to the great Anik Agadakis, who really used a lot of the great material in assessing this, because Joe Montana is maybe the greatest quarterback of all time, probably second greatest of the Super Bowl era behind Joe Montana. But Tom Brady. Unfortunately, when you look at a take, sometimes you have to look at the origin of the take. And in this case, irrefutably, the origin of that take is Fresno, California. So, sorry.
This is not Fresno.
Thank you, Vida.
Now, you have a chance to rebut. Feel free.
Daniel, for you to say the where it originated from, the origin of the take is Fresno, the guy's from Bakersfield, okay? So he did go to Fresno State. And was he a good player at Fresno State? Yes. Because I don't agree with him. I don't agree with him. So you're saying it's Fresno State. Now you combined everyone from Fresno State.
But when Paul George plays well, it's shout out Fresno State. Valley's doing big things.
So you know what? Ron Adams, you know what? Forget you. You suck. That's in Daniel's opinion. Wow. And he wants to tell you that your defense, all this stuff. So why
burn
don't
it
you
down,
talk to
son.
Ron? Burn it down. If you're going to do it, just do it.
They gave up 33 points in the second half.
Yeah,
all credit to Fresno State.
David Carr gets that credit, too, because he's from Fresno.
He had the single biggest season of being sacked in the NFL. And I could just say that, you know, David Carr held the ball too long that season. And it would be equally laughable if I was to look at the season in which he got sacked 72 times, which is the most in the history of the National Football League. I could put that squarely on David Carr. Oh, he held the ball too long. He wasn't getting to his secondary read. This and that, this and that. It's a trash take. And then you could thereby say, because I'm from Fairfax, California, that take is associated with Fairfax. And I'll just close by saying this. You were the one, when you answered this question first, you got to be the leadoff hitter. You were the one who injected Fresno State into the conversation. I simply was following up on that, Lowe. That's all I did.
Well, you're wrong, but it's okay.
Well, you said it.
Now, if you want to narrow it down even more, he's not from the Moo. You are. Mm. And that take did not originate from the Moo. So at least, you know, as you get closer and closer to point of origin, you can dodge some of it. Maybe you're just dealing with a little splash. Like you're in the urinal next to a guy who's just completely like the trough. You catch a little splash from someone when you're all in there. You caught a little splash.
Man.
But you're in the Moo, so it's not that big of a deal, right?
That's a hard pass. I just don't understand.
It's not up to you. Sometimes you just get caught in the crossfire.
I just don't understand the biggest deal is how he just came down and said everything from Fresno. It's idiotic.
You're so upset over this.
That's all. That's all I'm saying.
That's not what I said. I said it's indicative of what, you know, can come and sometimes does come from the Know. And in this case, yes, and I read Marcy's tweets on Twitter, who I have subsequently blocked, and it goes right along that same lines of just garbage from Fresno.
Where do you – okay, as we peel it back to the topic at hand and move away from Fresno.
Let's peel it.
If you really were to try to make a case that Joe Montana isn't the best or second best quarterback of the Super Bowl era, legitimately, how far down the line could you go before it becomes hogwash? I think we all agree that David Carr saying he's not top 10 – that's just nonsense. It's a bad look. Even if you're trying to gain attention, and you gained quite a bit of attention from this weekend, it's a bad look regardless. It's a bad look for anything you say moving forward because people are always going to go, aren't you the guy that says Joe Montana is in top 10? If you were to try to make the case for Montana not being one or two, how far could you legitimately go before it would be reasonable to say you are trolling?
I think you'd have to look at every single quarterback and look at how many other Hall of Famers they played with if you're trying to make the case. And you look at Eli Manning and the fact that he was able to win two Super Bowls with an offense that probably wasn't that great. He didn't have the same caliber of player that Joe Montana played with. So maybe if you were going to make that argument, you could get a certain distance. But I still don't think that finds Joe Montana out of the top 10, no matter what criteria you look at. And Lo, you probably know this better than anybody. No one guy ever completely makes an offense. As much as Tom Brady, we want to revere as the greatest quarterback ever, maybe the greatest player ever, he's had some pretty good weapons and guys who have made him look good, guys who he's made look good, but it's the ultimate team game. So for him to say that Joe Montana's a system guy and that Bill Walsh was the reason, I think it's a mighty stretch.
Like if I came on here and laid out a case that Montana isn't top five all time, would that be a pretty much unanimous opinion that I'm trolling?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, well, top five all time, you could probably come up with four quarterbacks quarterbacks.
But he was talking about, he said in the Super Bowl era. So he was just limiting it to Super Bowl. Is there five?
I don't know if he's limiting it to just Super Bowl players
or
if he's saying everyone pre-Super Bowl. Do you want to hear? Do we have the audio again? Yeah, maybe we need some clarification here.
Because I think he was talking about the Super Bowl era.
What does that mean? Does that mean just quarterbacks in Super Bowls? Or does that mean anyone from the start of Super Bowl I on?
I think it's anyone from Super Bowl I on, but it's felt to me like he was talking about just Super Bowl quarterbacks.
Yeah. Okay, play it again.
I've been in the pocket. I understand. Okay, look, Bill Walsh is a genius. Bill Walsh is a genius, and Joe Montana arrived at precisely the right time. Just like the White Wizard, Gandalf, right? He arrives precisely when he intends to. Joe Montana showed up from Notre Dame. Bill Walsh is a genius. The defenses they were facing were not even close to being ready for this. This is a walk in the park. This was 7-on-7 against junior high kids. They had no idea what they were seeing with the shifts and the motions and the ball out on time. Steve Young is a is
you know
a
what the one word that I
All right, so all the fighting that takes place on social, a lot of people are just limiting it to top 10 quarterbacks all time. Like, that's what they're arguing. I don't know what the – it's even worse if the take is just Super Bowl
right?
quarterbacks.
That's what
it's even worse.
That's what I'm saying.
It's so much worse.
There's not a lot of quarterbacks that have been to the Super Bowl that many times, period. So that's why I was saying when you're talking about the Super Bowl.
They never lost in the Super Bowl.
Right.
Like, that's Brady's lost in the Super Bowl. If you're going to just look at only their Super Bowl performances – that would be the line of delineation. So let's, for our own sake, give him the benefit of the doubt and just say top 10 all time. We'll give him a little bit more leeway there. I don't know how far down the line you can go before people look at you for being crazy for suggesting Joe Montana is not a part of what? Top two, everyone on earth would agree with that. If you make the case that Montana is one, you're going to have an argument for Brady, but that's going to be the only argument. If you make the case that Montana is two overall behind Brady, a lot of people are going to agree with you there. If you say Montana's top three and you slide someone else in, now it's probably getting to the point where you're going to have some serious pushback, but there might be a good case to be made. But I think once you get past that, Montana was widely regarded as the number one all time prior to Brady passing him in Super Bowl wins. So if we are willing to concede Brady as one, fine. I think people, even Niner fans, I think are willing to sit back and say that's at least a reasonable position to take. But outside of two or three, you can't. I could not come in here today. I could lay out a ridiculous case supporting five other quarterbacks as better than Montana. I could find a way to do it. But that doesn't mean anyone would buy into it. And that doesn't even mean it would be true. Just because Johnny Cochran and Robert Shapiro laid out a great case for OJ doesn't mean he didn't do it. Work OJ into the programs to pay the under.
Yes, it's under on this now 87 consecutive shows with an OJ reference as the streak continues.
It's unkillable, that streak.
Sorry, too soon? Might be. I was just jotting down some names, and like you said, Joe, even if you came up with three or four names, like you look at Brady, Peyton, Elway, and Favre, you could make a case, to your point, statistically, about all those quarterbacks. You could make some sort of a case, cockamania, as we like to say, to put the four of them ahead of Joe Montana, but still, he's sitting there at fifth now. Find me five more guys, or in this case, six more quarterbacks that would then knock him out of the top 10. I don't think you could possibly do that.
If you were starting a franchise today, knowing everything you know about Joe Montana and Peyton Manning, who would you take?
Wow, super question. I think you would take Joe Montana. It'd be close, because both have a great ability to make the decisions at the line of scrimmage. Similar arms, neither one a, quote, big arm guy. But I think he would go with Montana, but it'd be close.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Montana on that one, too.
Yeah, if you said one of Brady, and I would take Montana because of his movement in the pocket. Now, if you just said purely arms and above the shoulder, it would be Peyton Manning. To me, it'd be Peyton Manning. But you have to realize, that throw that he threw to Dwight Clark, Manning can't do that. Because he couldn't have bought the time, he couldn't have moved. So that's what I'm looking at, the criteria. When I'm looking at Rodgers, I look at Big Ben, Elway can move. I wouldn't have Favre, because Brett Favre would be, he tries sometimes, he puts himself in compromising positions because he tried to be such a gunslinger. So I'm looking at certain guys and saying, who would be able to move and do certain things in the pocket? If you put Rodgers on the teams that he had, you put Brady, there's a lot of quarterbacks that would have had the success that he had. And then I think there's some great ones. Like if you look at, Brett Favre would have had the success. I don't think so. I think that sometimes he would have maybe got ahead of himself in certain situations. So it depends on how you limit it. You look at Russell Wilson. Could Russell Wilson have made that play? Without a doubt. You put Russell with Jerry and all those guys. You look at his body of work, you say, man, he could have been pretty good too. Smart guy. So it's hard to really justify. It's hard to really say who would have been the greatest. Because let's be honest. Let's look at Brady. Brady's had some hell of a defense.
First three Super Bowls in the early 2000s were led. I don't want to take away from Brady, but he had some very solid defenses
right,
on that team. Good balance those teams.
So I'm not taking away from him. He's great, and he found a way to win, and I think he's the best out of the quarterback. So I just look at it. It's so many different things, but top 10, it's crazy for him to say that he's not. Top 5, it's crazy. He's a limited top 3 or 4 maybe, but you can make a case. You can make a case and throw other guys in there and say they could have had some success.
What about the comment that Steve Young was better? Because I've heard that from others before. I'm not sure.
I've heard
Doesn't
that too.
Butcher Boy feel that way? Isn't Butcher Boy in the camp? I don't want to out him for if he's not, but I think I've heard him at least build the case before.
I think you
can, like, if you take Steve Young and you just put him in Joe Montana's spot from day one, does Steve Young accomplish everything Joe Montana accomplished?
See, I don't think so. I think that Joe, even though the Young could do great things, you got to look at and take into account and consideration the heart, the want to and the desire. And it's hard because we can get numbers and throw Danny Fowkes in there. You can friggin' look at what my man Danny Marino done. But if you just say, what about the heart? What about those things that you can't put a measure on? And I think that's where Montana has to be able to separate from a lot of these guys.
Intangibles, yeah. Like, yeah, going in the huddle in a tense moment and pointing out John Candy in the stands and having everybody in the huddle start to break up and laugh, and you're able to cut the tension. That's not a play that shows up in the box score, right, or football, right, reference, you know, his ability to lead. And I'm not saying Steve Young wasn't a great leader,
right,
because
it.
He was, but in those moments, like you said, the throw to Dwight Clark, to have the presence of mind to put that ball in that spot, whether it was thrown away or not, it was at least thrown to an area where Dwight Clark potentially could go get it. And obviously he did, and the rest is history.
Once again, though, it highlights it's not just basketball. If you somehow found your way to the top and you won a bunch of championships, there will always be someone there to tell you you weren't as good as people say, that you weren't as good as the records indicate, you aren't as good as the resume suggests, and that you need to be brought down a peg or two. David Carr on Joe Montana, everybody on Stephen Curry, every chance they get. You notice you're not hearing as much of the Steph overrated train these days, considering that once again he went nuclear in Game 3, 36 points on 11 of 26 shooting, 6 boards, 3 assists, was plus 19 in 37 minutes. Steph Curry is now the first player in Warrior franchise history to score 35 or more points in 3 straight playoff games, the first 3 of a series, that is. 35 or more in games 1, 2, and 3 of a playoff series. What could he do next year if Durant leaves? Like, if Durant chooses to leave and Curry's back in charge as the guy taking the majority of the shots, obviously he's not going to maintain at a level like this because it's the regular season. But he could average 30. He could go ahead and get himself right back in the MVP consideration, could he not?
Without a doubt, when he has that much of a need to go out there and score that often. And I'm just concerned about Rob Parker, Joe, and his take from last week about him being, what, the gamote, the greatest mirage of all time.
Not a coincidence that the Portland series and all the numbers started right after all that BS.
Yeah, and I wonder if Rob Parker's career isn't really the mirage that he was referring to, and got to make sure that his career is okay, because perhaps his entire career got funeralized in some way that awful take.
I think after you see what Steph Curry's doing, I think that you can say the front runner for MVP right now, because everyone believes KD's gone, for front runner for MVP right now would have to be Steph Curry.
For next season?
Uh-huh. If you just look at what he's been able to do, now the buzz, you look at every show, it's talking about KD out, is KD if this team better? It's just crazy how the narrative shifts. It's crazy what people think. Steph Curry right now at the forefront. He is a guy, in my opinion, right now would be at the forefront for the MVP.
Yeah, but what hurts is if Durant leaves and they don't win 56 games. Say they take a step back. Say they win a reasonable 52 games next year because they rest some guys and they're coming off yet another title run. If Durant leaves, even if Steph puts up huge numbers, the first thing people are going to point to are the amount of games they won 3 years ago with Durant, 2 years ago with Durant, this year with Durant, and then they're going to show the drop off to Steph, and they're going to hammer him for, well, Durant left and you won 8 fewer games. Clearly you're not that valuable. Of course you were going to get more shots. That's naturally where the haters would go.
Yeah, and the gamote talk, we'll talk again about him being a mirage. Plus, I don't think that Steph is going to drive for the regular season MVP, even though his productivity would go up. You've got guys out there, Russell Westbrook, old Jim Harden, as you like to call him.
Old Jimmy.
Giannis Antetokounmpo, who will be pushing for the MVP whether he gets it this year or not.
22 consecutive playoff series, the Warriors have now recorded a road victory. This is a stat you and I always like to talk about in the morning, how incredible it is. Last five years, the Warriors are 29-16 on the road in the postseason. Just let that marinate for a second. We're not talking about the regular season. We're not talking about some random stretch where you're able to do a really nice job with a 3-game roadie to play Miami, Orlando, and Charlotte, followed by Atlanta, and then you came on home, 4-game roadie. No, they are 29-16 on the road over the last 5 years. The 29 road wins over the last 5 years is the most ever in a 5-year span in the postseason. put that in perspective, 29 road wins in 5 years. There are five NBA teams that didn't win more than 29 games this season. The Bulls won 22 games. The Cavs won 19 games. The Knicks won 17. Phoenix won 19. And Atlanta won exactly 29. No, those are five teams that didn't eclipse 29 just wins this year. The Warriors have won 29 on the road over the last five seasons. Now, granted, they had a few extra games to pull it off. They've played 98 games in 5 years, but they've only played 47 road games. You get 41 during the regular season. So they get an extra six road games, and they still win more in the playoffs on the road than the damn Cavaliers and Knicks won all regular season. And that's just yet another thing that we'll say, oh, that's pretty impressive. And then we'll end up moving on.
Yeah, just another feather in the cap, which looks more like a headdress right now than it does just a lone feather in a lone cap, because they have so many of those stats, so many of these impressive streaks. And, Lo, you look at the way they did it to go to Portland, and you find yourself down 13 at the half. Andre Iguodala off to the locker room with a strained calf, and you think, all right, this is probably not one that goes their way. But a 29-13 third quarter. The way that this team is able to go in the locker room, I don't know if Steve Kerr is the greatest speech giver ever or if it's a question of the team collectively coming together, but the way they've come out in this postseason in the third quarter has been incredible.
What happens tonight if Portland's up by 10 at halftime? What is their thought process during the half? Oh boy, here we go again. People are creatures of habit. And this last two games, Portland had a 15-point lead, scored the first basket in the third quarter, went up as high as 17, and this one 13. They do not know how to beat the Warriors. They know they can't beat the Warriors. This has been absolutely amazing what we've witnessed, especially in particular the third quarter, how quick it's erased, and then they're playing in front. Portland has no idea, because it's like a guy, Joe, and you would appreciate this, that's a great takedown artist, and all he wants to do is shoot double, and you find yourself
You're talking about wrestling.
Yeah, and you find yourself sprawling, because you love it. That's why you came in, because wrestling's a great sport. You find yourself...
Also, to give the listeners a little context.
Yeah.
I don't think everyone knows what shooting for a double means.
Blow the whistle again. So you just find yourself, because you didn't have the mic.
There's a reason why I officiate, and you're an athlete.
He already nailed me for the five. You want another five?
No.
He got his loonies. He got five on it, and we're on to Cincinnati.
And just the relentless. You can't breathe because the guy's coming at you, trying to get that double leg, trying to take you down, and you're like sprawling. You're like, slow down. And before you know it, second round come, and you're looking at your coach like, what the hell do I do? I'm up, but this guy's coming. And that's what the Warriors, they're constantly on the attack. They're constantly on the offense, the defense. And you just sit there and you watch Portland just melt and crumble under that pressure.
Even when Portland's on top like they were in the half, as I strain to try to keep this wrestling analogy going, the Warriors are able to get the two-point escape or the two-point reversal.
Absolutely.
We got two.
Yeah, but neither would happen. Who's on top in your scenario?
Portland's on top. Portland's on top. Portland's just riding them, and then Golden State's biding their time. All
stalling.
Of a sudden, yeah, they're stalling.
Switch.
But you know what's coming. All of a sudden, pop.
Yep.
Grab that arm, flip it over, get the reversal.
2 points.
Next thing you know, yeah, it's two. Now they're back in it. Now both of them are on their feet. Portland's exhausted because they worked so hard to get on top. Now the Warriors are on their feet. Now the Warriors go ahead and shoot that single leg, and the Blazers, they got trouble.
Hell of a job.
Thank you, Lloyd.
That was great.
As we've discussed, my wrestling career lasted a single day, and I think I left early.
It was when you showed up and you found out that it required some work.
Yes, I was told that I could waltz to the state championship. I was a 98, I was 4'9", probably about 1.03, all chubby as a little redheaded fire hydrant of a freshman. Coach told me I'd be state champ.
He fooled you.
Yeah, he sure did. For a day.
Sounds like he fooled himself in the process there, too.
Yeah, the tennis team was looking better and better. All of a sudden, I found my racket, and off we go. No grappling in tennis, by the way.
Portland has found a way in every stage of this series to just have that one crucial breaking point work against him. That's what Houston has learned over the last few years, is that you have to minimize those breaking points. Game one, for as bad as they played, still only down six going to the fourth, but got cracked in the fourth quarter and lost by 22. Game two, 15-point halftime lead, cracked in the third quarter. Game three, I believe, is a 12 or 13-point halftime lead, cracked again in the third quarter. I had the over in that game. everything was looking good at the half. And then Portland comes out, of course, 13 points in the third quarter. Shout out to Warrior defense, but damn.
My God.
Let me get a little something there. Let me get to the rack a little bit. Based on the confidence you're projecting for tonight, would you lay the 3.5 with the Warriors?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't see this thing. I look at Portland, and they've given the Warriors their best shot. They have fought. They have scratched.
It's like that dude Brazil giving Deontay Wilder his best shot.
Oh, my God.
Do you want to pull out your envelope of cash to rustle into the microphone as you talk about how the Warriors are going to cover tonight?
Also, interestingly enough, since you said that we can't give you an opportunity to bend the knee on the 7-game series prediction because we're already past that point.
Okay.
But if you have an opportunity to bend the knee on the projection that Portland would win both games in Portland, if we gave you that opportunity, would you take it?
Hey, come on.
You don't have to take anything. I'm just offering you some mercy.
No, listen, we are.
He's past that.
I'm offering you a little mercy. You said that they would go to Portland and that the Blazers would win both games.
I did.
Series would be 2-2.
Right.
Not knocking you. But now if I give you the opportunity to just bend the knee on that, it won't be a clean sweep. We'll go ahead and we'll let the game three slide. We'll let the game three slide.
And
we'll give you one last opportunity to bend the knee and avoid the funeral take tomorrow.
I'm just going to go ahead. As long as I'm cremated, I'll go with the funeral take.
There is no cremation. We've already made it clear. There's casket slaps, casket tips.
Sure.
And some of these are so dangerous, you get urinated on after you roll out of the casket. I think it's graphic. Don't get me wrong. For everyone driving around.
Not very graphic, that at all.
But that's not, I don't want to say these things.
No.
But these are the things suggested via the Chill Out of Body text line 95795.
Text line, I'm not backing out. I lost. I said they're going to win. Portland's going to win two games, home games. They didn't. It's over. I lost that. That was just my opinion.
Oh.
I thought it was going 7, and it's not. And I was wrong. And it was. And you know what? That's why it's called opinion. It's not. It's just like,
right.
This is a radio show, and we make our predictions.
We don't do opinions. We do locks. We do locks and funerals. That's it. We deal in the extreme here.
We may have to cue up the funeral music then. It sounds like to me you're capitulating. You're giving in here. You're shutting it down. You're saying Portland won't win two games at home in this series? Wow.
I'm giving you an opportunity to bend the knee.
Don't let it happen again. Bend the knee.
Thank you, Tyrion. It's very good.
Defiant. The idea of bending the knee is becoming, it has yet to happen on this show. Now, granted, it's only something that's been instituted for the last week, but it's becoming, no one wants anything to do with that. It's a way to avoid a funeral, and yet everyone would rather go down in flames with their trash takes.
I'm not middle finger because middle finger bent the knee and it did what happened. Still got whacked.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen here. We're not going to have you bend the knee and then end up whacking you. This show has class.
That's why I'm.
It's class. You bend the knee, we accept you back into the family. The take is forgiven. We all move on with our day.
I'm Johnny Snow. I don't bow to nobody. So it's over. take me out.
Up in 20 minutes, someone bends the knee on this program. I guarantee you. That's coming up. Clint Azabuki, too, at the top of the hour. So. I think you've been given more than ample opportunity to bend the knee, and your Blazers will win at least two games at home.
I'm good. It's fine.
You're not good until we lay that baby to rest.
If the Warriors win tonight, we're coming in with 4 hours of funerals just for you. It's gonna be a presidential wake. It's gonna be the Capitol building, body in the middle. All the people who want to come see the president can come and do that. The problem is it'll be open casket, and at some point, some lunatic's gonna run up there and tip it over.
Here's the thing, Joe.
Yeah, and also the slap. Let's not forget about that.
That hurt. Here's the thing, Joe.
I'm going to hurt.
At 9 o'clock, if you give me the time to bend the knee, because my 7 takes, so the 7, I'll take it.
No, you already had a chance.
I'm talking to you.
You had two chances.
We gave you the opportunity to bend the knee after game 1 and 2, and you stood defiant. You said, no, Portland's coming back.
What did I say, though? I said, after this, I would let you.
Right. You were kind enough to tell us that if you predicted the Warriors in 7, and the Warriors went up 3-0, you were kind enough to let us know that you would be willing to accept the knee bend in that situation. Unfortunately, and I told you this then, would be unwilling to offer that to
unwilling.
You. And it's too easy
to
escape.
Jump on that and not to be on my back and have my back in an interesting, this whole perspective, you know, for you to just go that way.
Anna was given the same one opportunity, I believe, to bend the knee
on
Friday.
She's heading for a funeral, too. Yeah. She passed on her opportunity.
Yes, she had a chance. Joe and I have not had the chance. Coming up in 10 minutes, we get the chance to potentially.
Yeah, and you guys have kids to just take these deaths with kids.
It's a shame.
I'm willing to bend. I'm sorry. I'm willing to bend.
It's too late.
It's too late. It's too late, Ned.
It's too late. Now we all know the funeral's coming, and we're all excited for it.
Do you know the Bible?
We might have callers. This might be the first ever funeral where callers get to call in and be a part of the eulogy.
Wow, that's a
great
idea.
Throughout the show, we'll take callers.
That is going to be so wrong for you guys to do that.
But it's going to be good ratings.
Your take is going to be on a spike. That's what it's going to be.
Listen, listen. If they give you guys a chance to do the eulogy, please don't call in today. Don't do that.
Not today, but if once it's all said and done, it might just be a day of calls. Like after the Warriors win the title, we take a bunch of phone calls, we have a bunch of laughs. Tomorrow could be a day where people call in and they share their fondest memories of your take. You know, I really enjoyed it when they were up one and, you know, he was given that opportunity. You know, I liked it when he said it. It was a strong take. You know, it wasn't always the smartest of takes, but we all liked him. It tried hard. You know, everyone can get up and say a few nice words. And we'll let the callers in because, you know, they deserve to be a part of it. They're a part of the show. Warrior playoff coverage on 95.7 The Game is presented by Great Clips, proud partner of the Golden State Warriors. Whew, tough situation to be in. Clint Azabuki coming in studio in about 15 minutes. So we haven't even touched on this yet. Magic Johnson went on First Take on ESPN this morning and just basically unloaded on the Lakers. Like, just let all the skeletons out of the closet.
Gas and input fire?
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who they gave an opportunity to bend the knee, and he just snitched out the whole organization. This is incredible. We got three takes for you. We're going to work in order. First, here's Magic Johnson and his feelings on general manager Rob Pelinka.
Does Magic Johnson feel betrayed, and
obviously,
if so,
Stephen
by
Smith.
Whom?
Well, you know, I think if you're going to talk betrayal, it's only with Rob. But again, I had to look inside myself, right? But I had been doing that for months because I didn't like that Tim Harris was too involved in basketball. He's supposed to run the Laker business, but he was trying to come over to our side. Jeannie's got to stop that, right? You got to stop people from having those voices, Molly, you talked about. It's too many people at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens, everybody gets to share their opinion.
Wow. I didn't see it cutting off at that spot.
No.
But also just saying Rob Pelinka, the one who stabbed him in the back. Now, just for fun, I want you to hear the question and how Stephen A. Smith asked it.
Does Magic Johnson feel betrayed, and if so, by whom?
Magic's sitting right there, so he could say, do you.
Right.
But does Magic Johnson.
But that wouldn't be Stephen A.
No, it wouldn't
it's
be.
So good.
Stephen A, he's a joke, dude. That guy's funny.
So he outs it right there. Rob Pelinka gets outed as the guy who stabbed him in the back. Now, Magic continues talking about things that were taking place outside of the Laker offices.
And then I start hearing, you know, Magic, you're not working hard enough. Magic's not in the office. So people around the Laker office was telling me Rob was saying things. And
Rob Pelinka.
Rob Pelinka. And I didn't like those things being said behind my back, that I wasn't in the office enough and so on and on. So I started getting calls from my friends outside of basketball saying those things now were said to them outside of basketball. Now, not just in the Laker office anymore. Now it's in the media and so on.
And these are people you trust.
Exactly.
Max Kellerman also on this show.
Yeah.
Also on this show. Maybe he gets a question at some point. So Pelinka not just talking about Magic within the organization, saying he's not working very hard, but also outside the organization. And then the resignation. Why, Magic? Why did you resign?
The straw that broke the camel's back was I wanted to fire Luke Walton. And we had Max three meetings. I showed her the things he did well and the things he didn't do well. And I said, listen, we got to get a better coach. I like him. He's great. Former Laker, the whole thing. So the first day, well, let's think about it. Second day, okay, you can fire him. Then the next day, no, we should try to work it out. So when we went back and forth like that, and then she brought Tim Harris into the meeting, and Tim, you know, wanted me, he wanted to keep him because he was friends with Luke. And Luke's a great guy, great guy.
He is.
And so when I looked up and said, wait a minute, I only really answer to Jeannie Buss. Now I got Tim involved. And I said, it's time for me to go. I got things happening that was being said behind my back. I don't have the power that I thought I had to make the decisions. And I told them, when it's not fun for me, when I think that I don't have the decision-making power that I thought I had, then I got to step aside.
This is a mess.
Mess.
And poor Luke getting crop dusted on this. You probably could have left that out, right? Like, I don't know if Luke needed to be brought in with the straw that broke the camel back was, I wanted to fire Luke Walton. It's like, damn, that he ended up getting fired. He's with the Kings now. I don't know if that needed to be addressed, but, I mean, scorched earth. Irvin Magic Johnson,
yes, best thing that could have happened to Luke Walton was getting fired from L.A., and now he goes to a situation where he can actually maybe be a coach. I'm trying to wrap my brain around this because Magic is the president of basketball operations at the time. Rob Pelinka is the general manager. Rob works for you, and you are good friends with the owner, Jeannie Buss. So if Rob is saying these things about Magic's never around, and he's saying it behind your back, it's probably because you're not around, and you are a problem. So if you're Magic, you talk to Rob right away, face-to-face, and you say, something's got to change. And Rob, you're fired because I'm Magic Johnson, and this is my organization, basically. But because Magic wasn't there, Rob was obviously able to get enough people against Magic to where he felt vulnerable. And the way he did Luke Walton, that's embarrassing for Magic Johnson. He comes out looking the worst in all this.
He does. And I'll tell you what, I think the problem here is that Magic wanted to have a job title with the Lakers. He wanted to have a position where he was visible, and he wanted to be on the payroll, but he didn't want to actually do the work. More of like an ambassador type role. He wanted to be a guy who's affiliated with the organization, appears at events, talks, shake hands, says nice things, sends out his tweets about other players, relatively harmless, not involved in the day-to-day. I think that's how he viewed the situation, and the rest of the organization was like, you're the president of basketball ops. If you were a consultant, that would be one thing. But you're the president of basketball ops. We expect more from you, and we're not getting it. Your thoughts on how all that played out?
Yeah, it's always, like I said, they say there's two sides to every coin. We get that. So I think that all of them have something to blame, some blame to be carried. What is Pelinka? Was he really trying to sabotage? Is a lot of people, what's the word on the street about him? There's a lot of things that are coming out about him. There's things that they said about he and Kobe. It's a mess. The Lakers show it's definitely a show, and it's not the best show on the hardwood anymore by far. And I think that there has been a power struggle there. You look at the certain guys, what their intentions were, what their motives were, and I think that, you know, it doesn't come out in the wash, come out in the rinse, and I think that all of them have some blame. Without a doubt, all of them have something to blame, and it starts with Jeannie, too.
Chilton Autobody text line offering up some very interesting solutions. They don't want to see you get funeralized, and they also don't want to see you get egged at the parade should the Warriors win the title, suggesting that if you bend the knee on Warrior takes, the Warrior takes they don't like, and just absolve yourself, the eggs will not come out on parade day. I know that that's a big decision, so we'll let it go. We'll let you think about it, but interesting to be able to enjoy the parade without getting drilled by eggs.
Okay, that's fine.
Could be a big situation for you.
That'd be a great situation for me.
Colin Ozabuki in studio next. Joe Lowe and Dibs 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.